Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hello, Andrew. This is Andrew Patrick. Is that you, Andrew?
It is.
Hi, Andrew. Hey, so thanks for being our guest. This is The Creative Alchemist. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I'm Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you every Thursday. And we come to you to talk about your business needs. The business of your business is what we discuss with you. And we talk about lots of things, such as taking advantage of opportunities in a COVID-19, strategies for a new year, transferable skills, and we've discussed many other things, including your health in this kind of environment. Every week we have a guest, and this week will be no different. We'll have, I'll say, an especially special guest. Most people only wish they could have the ear of an attorney with some of their important questions, and we're actually going to make that available to our callers today. So before I introduce him, the topic for today is sexy and not so sexy secrets of thriving in a COVID business world. So there are some sexy aspects to your business, and then there are some parts of it that are not so sexy, and some people may even dread the non-sexy parts. So depending on your skill sets, that will dictate which parts of the business you find most exciting or sexy or empowering, whichever words that you use. And Lori, are you with us? And we're waiting for Lori. So in the meantime, our guest is Andrew Crabtree, and Andrew is a business attorney. He has a quite extensive background. There are a number of things that we are going to discuss on this call with Andrew, and he and I are going to have a back and forth, an interview. We're going to have a conversation, and then we're going to open up the lines for callers. So if you'd like to call in and ask Andrew some questions, the number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. And do not be shy. We look forward to your calls, your questions. And before we go down that path, Andrew, say hello, introduce yourself, and let everyone know you're here.
Hi, Ted. Hi, everybody out there. I hope you can hear me.
You're on speakerphone, correct?
No, I have. I'm plugged in.
Plugged in.
Headphones.
Okay. Okay, that's actually a little better. You're closer. It sounds better. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. Some people may think this is not so sexy. I'm excited about these topics. But, you know, that's unusual. I'm a lawyer. What can I tell you?
Okay. So wait, just before we go down the path of your career, where are you from originally?
I grew up on Long Island and came back here after law school and working in the city. Moved out here to have kids and start my family, and moved my practice out here about 20 years ago.
Okay. How big is your family?
I have three children and a dog and my lovely wife.
Okay.
We're all quarantined together now. So.
That's great. A dog makes it even easier to be indoors. So, and in Long Island, most people have a backyard, so it's not so bad as being cooped up in a condominium in Manhattan. So
that's right. It's nice to get out. The weather's been great, so we can't complain that much.
So tell us, what type of law do you focus on?
I focus on commercial transactions and commercial litigation. What that means is litigation is lawsuits. Lawsuits generally are business disputes. I handle a lot of business disputes that relate to real estate, construction, development, business divorce, that kind of thing. And the transactional side is, really I serve as general counsel to a lot of companies. A lot of the transactions are business related, buying and selling businesses, buying and selling buildings, and also, construction agreements and just general contract law.
Okay. All right. And for some people, buying and selling businesses can be very sexy. a lot of people make a great living doing that.
Yes, it's very interesting. Right now it's quiet, though, but we're seeing it start to pick up a little bit now. We see some inklings of some activity, so that's good news
okay.
for us.
Well, that's not going to be our focus today, but a question is, do you think that the coronavirus has diminished or lessened valuations for companies since you have less transactions happening?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, the valuations depend upon what's happening in a litigation. If a shareholder value dispute, the valuation would be as of a certain date when the person was, kicked out or divorced. But businesses now, certainly, valuations are often triggered to earnings, and earnings for the last few months for most businesses, I suspect, have been really in the gutter.
Really?
Sometimes they're tracked over a period of time, over, let's say, 3 years, so it gets averaged in. But even with that kind of averaging, the last few months has been devastating to a lot of businesses, and particularly depending on the industry, restaurants, for example, bars, nightclubs,
right.
They've been devastated.
Other
businesses are thriving in this environment, shifting to, buying and selling masks or PPE, I should say.
Right.
So some businesses are thriving. There's, industrial cleaning businesses are thriving. These kind of things. Even this last week we were buying a corporate jet. That business is thriving. People don't want to fly commercial. So the business of buying and selling and brokering commercial jets is hot.
Interesting.
So it really all
depends. Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah,
so
guess it's cheap and the coronavirus is all over. So people want to avoid airports and this is the way a lot of people go.
So is this buying and selling jets, or is it like net jets? I mean, you don't really get involved with like net jets and sharing flight times. Like you don't get involved in that stuff. You just get involved in the little literal transaction of selling a plane.
Well, there's the purchase of the plane itself, but most people who purchase corporate planes, if they're, wealthy individuals or what have you, they'll buy the jet, and they don't use it all themselves. So what they do is they have a management agreement with somebody.
Hi, baby. Y'all are back quick. Did y'all are back?
Yeah,
oh, that's interesting. I actually did, but sorry, guys. Hi, Lori Miller. I'm on air. that's really interesting,
hey,
Andrew. I actually never thought about, that's another great way of making money, too.
Yeah, so a lot of, if you buy a corporate jet and you're not going to fly every weekend, there's a management company that takes care of it for you in a hangar, and they maintain
that's
it. And they'll charter it out. and people want to fly to Florida, Florida, California, they'll fill up by time.
They don't have anything. They don't have anything.
Hey, Lori, is someone else, do you have someone else been on a call with some noise in the background?
Yeah, you can pull on a call.
So put everyone on hold.
Okay.
Or, yeah, just put them on hold. And I'm echoing now. So.
Yeah, you are. Oh.
Everyone is. So, keep going, Andrew. What were you saying?
Andrew, are you there?
You may have put him on mute, on hold also.
Let's see.
Unmuted.
Are you back, Andrew?
I am back. Can you hear me?
Okay. Perfect. Yes.
Perfect.
Well, we got off on a tangent about jets because maybe that's sexy. People will want to hear about sexy things. But some businesses are taking off, no pun intended, and some businesses are having a tough time right now. So one of the things that I deal with clients now is how to respond to the crisis, right? That's a serious issue that's facing them. If you're a restaurant, if you're a business that's been adversely affected, you have creditors knocking on your door. You may be in a business where your customers are ailing and you can't collect the money that you're owed. So, you know, this kind of crisis affects different businesses in different ways, and there's a, you know, there's a chain reaction to it. It's a domino effect. If you are a tenant, you can't afford to pay your rent. Your landlord is having difficulty collecting rent. Landlord's got to pay his mortgage, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a big part of my practice now and has been really since the outset. When they first closed restaurants, I have a lot of restaurant clients and nightclubs and comedy clubs in New York City, and they were shut down immediately. So they had to deal with negotiating with creditors, with landlords, and try to figure out how to deal with it.
Yeah, the negotiation with creditors and landlords is quite difficult. I mean, some landlords were great.
Most landlords are you know, if they're relatively experienced and professional, you know, they will know how to deal with it. Sometimes landlords will give a rent abatement. Sometimes they'll give a rent deferral. You know, you don't have to pay April, May, June, or you can pay half in April, May, June, but we'll want you to pay it back in, you know, beginning in 2021. Or if you get your PPP loan, because part of that PPP loan can be used towards rent, they'll condition any kind of abatement on repaying that. But the number one thing to keep in mind, particularly when you're a tenant or a debtor, is you really have to reach out and touch somebody. The landlords, for example, and this is using landlords as an example, but it really applies to a lot of situations when somebody's in financial stress. But if the worst tenant is not the one who just doesn't pay, but the worst tenant is one that doesn't pay and doesn't say anything. So if you reach out and touch somebody, if you pick up the phone, call your landlord and say, hey, times are tough. You know, right now where people are beginning to get back to work and so forth, but for the last few months, almost everything has been shut down. If you reached out to your landlord and said, having a tough time, can you, you know, what can we do? Can we defer rent? Can we work something out? Landlords are generally willing to do that. On the other hand, if you hide and remain silent and pretend, stick your head in the sand, pretend that you know, you don't have to deal with it unless somebody knocks on your door, then that's, you know, like human nature is such that you're going to ruffle feathers and they're going to be less eager to work with you if you've just been ignoring them and just refusing to pay, for example. You know, the courts have been closed, and landlord tenant evictions have had a moratorium, which will continue into August. But that doesn't mean that the cases can't be filed, and you're going to be online, and the landlord's going to, you know, want to have his or her rent. So that's the number one thing, is to really is to get in touch, start a conversation, start a dialogue. Creditors are always more favorably disposed to debtors or tenants who are trying to work things out. So that's the number one, maybe not so sexy secret, but that's the number one advice, is to really communicate, and you don't want to make it an adversarial situation. And can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm echoing back. And I'm not sure where Ted went. Ted, are you here?
You had me on mute. Now I'm back.
Oh.
Okay, I was wondering why.
We're
I was
just
wondering
having
why
a whole
no
lot
one...
of issues tonight. I'm sorry.
I was wondering why no one was responding to my question.
I just didn't want to hear you. Warning everybody. Here I was dispensing jewels of wisdom, and I was getting no reaction.
Okay. I'm right here.
Jewels of wisdom, for sure.
Well, what I wanted to ask is, are the courts closed right now? And because I heard you say something about people can file online, so. Can we get some clarity around that? Are the courts closed? Can landlords still file for evictions or lawsuit online? I mean, how does that work? And you said don't remain quiet, so I kind of want to put that together. Courts closed. Landlords, can they still file for eviction or anything else? And can you negotiate? Like, should people be thinking about that? And use that as a call to action to actually negotiate something.
Well, for sure. First of all, the courts are technically open, and this is something that's changing day by day. So literally as of yesterday, there's a memorandum from the administrative judge saying that the courts for non-essential litigation are open, and you could file electronically or by mail instead of coming to court. So technically a landlord could, as of this week, could file an eviction proceeding. However, the governor's executive order states that there was a moratorium on all evictions until I think June 25 or June, I think
That's
today, I think what ran out this week. And they extended a moratorium until August 20 if your eviction was based upon your failure to pay rent, and that your ability to pay rent was due to a COVID-related hardship. So that's a pretty broad term, pretty broad category. So I think it's fair to say for our purposes of discussion that evictions based on non-payment are generally stayed until August 20th. It doesn't mean, though, that the landlord can't file it. And a lot of landlords, anticipating an avalanche of filings and assuming that it's going to be first come, first serve, are starting to commence the proceedings now.
Okay.
So you can get the court case in, you can get a judgment of eviction, judgment of possession, and a warrant eviction, but you can't actually evict them until August. That's less than a month away, unless it gets extended. So it's a very real possibility.
Okay. All right. And even if you are, let's say, a restaurant or any business, and you know that your landlord filed for an eviction online, will you know it now, or you won't know until August? How does that work?
You'll know it now. They have to give you serve you with a copy of the court papers, like in any court proceedings. When you see a process server on TV or movies, you can serve. You have to get served by the landlord. So you'll know at least a couple of weeks before the court date. The thing is that we don't know right now. There are no court dates to come in and show up in court, but you can file them now.
Okay. So how hard is it to negotiate when you're in that situation? Or is it better to just hire someone like you because it's more complicated?
Well, I think, you know, and this is an advertisement to keep attorneys employed fund, but it's always better to have an attorney. There are free attorneys available through Legal Aid Society and Massachusetts Legal Services on Long Island, Legal Aid in New York City, or a component of Legal Aid in New York City. If it's a residential situation and you don't have the ability to hire a lawyer for yourself. Certainly in a commercial situation, I would recommend an attorney. You could negotiate yourself. Again, if you've had that dialogue with a landlord and you say, listen, I can't pay now, but I want to make a payment plan. I think that most landlords, particularly now in, let's say, a commercial situation where there's a retail tenant, a restaurant, or an office lease, they don't want an empty tenant. They don't want an empty space. They don't want a space without a tenant. So they'd much rather have somebody who's making an effort to pay and to stay and continue, whether it's on a reduced basis or whether there's a payment plan for lost payments to be paid back in the future. I think most landlords would much prefer to work it out. And the last thing they want, I believe, is to be able to evict somebody, and then you have an empty restaurant space, you have an empty retail space or office space, and start looking for a new tenant. It's always preferable because, you know, most landlords want to even if you have an attorney's fees provision in your lease, if the landlord can get his attorney's fees paid, judges are not thrilled about enforcing those. So it's cheaper, it's more efficient, economical for a landlord to work it out. Say, we'll work out a deal. You can stay, and you have to make payments over 6 months or whatever the time frame is. And you get to stay in, the landlord gets his money, her money, and they're happy. So it's a much better alternative than to litigate. You may have, you know, to the end, you may have somebody who, and I have a situation now where one tenant just unilaterally decided not to pay. The business is still operating, and he just, you know, won't communicate with the landlord. Landlord offered a payment plan. And, you know, even odious landlords are, they're people too. They get insulted, offended with the lack of communication. So in some cases, they may be more likely to say, listen, I'm going to take it to the court. I want to get paid every dollar. I'm entitled to it. The lease says I can get it. I'm going to get it. And I'm going to get, you know, all my attorney's fees as well. Now, I've heard from other clients that have heard that landlord tenants are saying no judge is ever going to evict anybody in this situation now with the COVID and so forth. Well, you know, that may be so, and it may be sort of on a practical level, the judge may twist arms and try to knock heads together to have a deal reached rather than, have a hearing and ultimately have to award possession and monies to a landlord. They'd much rather have to work it out, not only because they avoid having to go through the hearings and so forth, but that's generally the better outcome. But they don't have to. And I would never tell a tenant who's got, for example, a commercial lease that says you have to pay. If you don't pay, the landlord can get attorney's fees and evict you. I would never tell a client that, no judge is ever going to enforce it, because they would.
I can see that. So let me ask you, let's go to the other side of the table. So if you're collecting, I mean, you've kind of answered maybe some of what it's like to be the collector. So do do some of the landlords kind of stick their head in the sand and just do nothing? Or, like, what are your suggestions on that side of the table?
Well, most landlords and will not stick their head in the sand. They know month to month, I guarantee you, who's paying and who's not paying. So,
right.
You know, they may be concerned about whether they want to take it to the nth degree and carry through an eviction because, again, they'll have an empty space. But they're certainly aware of who's paying rent and who's not paying rent, and they're aware of who's reaching out and not who's not reaching out. But for any creditor, landlord, anybody who's owed money, you know, they have the ability, again, subject to the moratorium on evictions, to enforce their rights. And, you know, there's a couple of things that they should all have in the contracts to help them do that. The first thing, the two best friends, are the attorney's fees provision and an interest provision. So if I have a contract, if I'm selling goods I've sold widgets, hate that example, but there you go, selling widgets and a customer doesn't want to pay, and where somebody might otherwise say, I know he wants his money, but I'll drag this out for a year or two or more. I have a case right now that's in its 13th year.
Wow.
We're happy to drag it out.
Did you say 13, like 1-3?
Yes. So I could talk about that.
Wow.
But most, a lot of debtors will say, oh, I'll drag it out. I'll settle for half, even if he sues me maybe a year or two later or more, 3, 4, 5 years later, God forbid 13, we'll settle for half and they'll take it and go home. Well, you know, if you have a provision in your contract or lease that says the prevailing party, the party who wins, can get their attorney's fees, well, as somebody who's owed money as a creditor, you know, you can say to your customer, listen, you could drag this out for 2 years, 5 years, 13 years. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to pay your attorney. You're going to have to pay my attorney. And I'm going to press to see that I get my money back. And if there's the customer or the debtor, if they're an ongoing business and there's assets there to enforce, if you can, you know, it's a much more powerful tool in the toolbox, the hammer. If you can tell them, you're not going to wear me down over years, and I'm going to get tired of paying my attorney because you're going to pay it. And also,
right.
an interest provision. If you have in your agreement, your contract with your customer, or what have you, if you say if you have a provision that says you're going to pay 1% a month, 1.5% a month. That's only 18% a year. That's legal. That's a good investment, 18% a year, that you can get at the end of the day. Now, you know, do courts necessarily always enforce the interest provisions or attorney's fees provisions? They ultimately would, but, you know, when cases settle, those things are certainly the first to get thrown out the window.
Okay.
But it's still a powerful tool.
Okay. So some people are working from home in this environment, and some people still have office space or a storefront. And talking about leases, being a debtor or creditor, could be seen as the sexy or non-sexy, depending on where you are. Collecting money is always sexy, right? So, I want to go to something that maybe most people would consider to be sexy. I want to switch gears. So, Andrew, you went to law school, and you worked in the courthouses at first, didn't you?
Yes, I was a prosecutor in the city, in Queens County.
Okay.
I was an assistant district attorney.
Okay. So you essentially had a 9-to-5, even if you worked 60 or 70 hours a week, we can just say that was a 9-to-5. You reported to someone's office and you were responsible for certain outcomes as a prosecutor, right? And that was your job.
Yep, that's fair to say.
And then one day, I'm not going to say you just woke up and decided to do something different. Maybe it did happen that way, or maybe it was always in the back of your mind. But at some point, you made a transition from doing a 9-to-5 to putting your own shingle out and having your own firm, correct?
Yes, I did. I did. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, say a little bit about your firm, what type of law you, how many attorneys you have, what the different types of law you practice. And then let's talk about how you made that transition and all the sexy moving parts from marketing to you being a creditor and a debtor and all the things that you had to go through. So how big's your firm? What type of law do you practice firm-wide?
Well, I started my own practice about 17 years ago. I had, after the DA's office, I worked in the city at a Park Avenue firm and then moved out to Long Island to a firm because we had a growing family and moved out here, and I worked at a large firm on the island. I then went to be general counsel for a developer, a client of the firm. That was the kind of work I was doing. From there, I decided I had worked as general counsel, but was also able to have my own practice, quote unquote, on the side. After a little while, I decided to let that take off, and it did. Right now, we have three attorneys, paralegal secretary, now a volume firm. We're really a boutique firm.
Right.
Handling, higher end commercial complex litigation transactions. But I'll tell you, the even though the barriers to entry may not have been high for me at the beginning, right, I would sublet some office space and get a computer and a phone. They don't teach you in law school how to run a business. So that's one of the biggest things as a business owner that I've had to deal with over the years. In fact, I've heard that the most stolen book from law school libraries is a book from the American Bar Association called How to Start and Grow Your Own Law Practice.
Wow.
Because they don't teach that. it's something that, you figure you'll just be a lawyer and you'll do that. To be honest, that's what I did for many, many years. I just figured I would do the best work I could, high-quality work, put my head down, work away, and the business would follow. And to a large extent, it did. I didn't really network or market or do anything like that. I did good work, even if the client didn't know it, and kept them over the years because I did the right thing. And that's how my practice grew organically. But there's a certain point when, you realize you can't do it all yourself. And frankly, you shouldn't do it all yourself. So that's the stage where you go from being, the quote-unquote hero, the sole practitioner, to being more of a person who's running a business when you have to deal with employees, you have to deal with marketing, you have to deal with cash flow, staffing, and these kind of things. So that's been an interesting evolution in my practice over the years. And it's a tough balance to hold because you still do the work. When somebody calls my office, it's typically because they were referred to me or they know of me and they want to talk to me. So it's not a widget factory. I'm not making sausages where I can sit back and have salesmen go out and then have employees grind out the sausages. It's still something that I have to actively participate in. But it's also given me an appreciation as to the things that my clients deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Interesting. So one of the challenges that, and it's what many entrepreneurs face, is they really understand the technical part of their business, right? So the technical part of your business is practicing law, and your clients knew you for providing quality service. So for you to grow your business, you have to delegate, offload some of your cases. Was that difficult for you? Were you concerned about giving up quality? And you know, how did you deal with that? Like your mindset to make that transition?
Well, you know, it was the hardest thing to do. You know, there was a certain point when, you know, when I had just gone on my own, I was subletting a room and a suite from a friend who had an office, and I was doing everything myself. I was the secretary, I was the partner, the associate, the copy boy, and everything like that. But it's not the best use of your time to do that. And the ability to have or really let go and give somebody the green light to do something, it is very difficult, particularly if you are, you know, detailed person, you know, maybe a little, what do you call it, OCD or anal compulsive or whatever it is. You know, most
right,
people
right.
who take pride in the work is that only they can do it, right? Only I could draft a lease, right? Well, you know what? No, Julius Blumberg did. He drafted a lease, maybe it was forms, but everybody else stole leases, right? And the key is to attract good talent, treat them well. You have to pay them well, but more importantly, treat them well, train them, and if they have the same vision that you have, and that's part of the leadership component of running any business. You have to translate your vision and the values of your business to your employees. So at my firm, we really care about our clients. They're not just a file. We're not a mill. We get involved with their businesses intimately and really tie our success to theirs over the years. So if you don't have staff that share your vision and share the values of your firm, even if the person, the attorney, even if she came from Harvard or she's brilliant, if they don't share those values, that's due to lack of leadership, and that's on you as the entrepreneur. So it's been a wild ride, but fortunately, because I think I take care of my employees, I respect them and do the right thing, I've been able to keep and retain very good talent. And you train them and you work with them, and at a certain point, you're able to be comfortable enough to say, okay, on this issue, maybe it's a failing tenant eviction, for example. We've been talking about that. You have the green light for this because I've seen and read your work product over the years, and I know you're totally capable. You have a green light for that. Maybe you have a yellow light for something else that I want you to check with me, or I want to read it and review it. And some things are red lights that you have to take care of. So that's the struggle. There are attorneys I know who maybe not the best attorneys out there, but they're great at running a firm and running a business. And, you know, that skill is unique, and it really takes a combination of both really to make that sustainable in the long term, I think.
Okay. That's well put. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Lori, do we have any callers, anyone that would want to have
we do.
A conversation with Andrew?
I don't know if they wanted to speak or if they're just listening, but I took them off of mute. Hi.
What's
Are you
the area
listening
code?
Or would you like to join us?
What's the area code?
518.
518, you're live and on the air with the Creative Alchemist. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, friend. It's Joanne. How are you?
Hi, pretty well and yourself. Thanks for calling, Joanne. Where you call? Let everyone know where you're calling from.
I'm in upstate New York, Albany.
Okay, great. So do you have a question for Andrew?
Yes, and I apologize. It's kind of in and out of the conversation. I'm here with kids by myself, and I'm outnumbered. So it's a bit chaotic, so I apologize. But I have a small business. I make jewelry and bookmarks, and I'm developing a line of higher-end bookmarks, and I'm curious about patenting a name or copywriting a name. Like, where do I start with that process? Or is that something that I would even do for a business as small as mine? Like, I don't know.
Well, I think what you're talking about is about trademarking sort of a business name or the name of a product. And
yeah.
You can do that, you know, that you can copyright something that you write. If you write a book or whatever, or an article, you can copyright that. A trademark is what most people are talking about when they're talking about a business name or a product name. And that's generally something that is done through an attorney, because you have to file an application for a trademark with the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington. There
okay.
are the not so sexy secret is that there are companies online that will help you with that. And you know, if it's not a patent or something that's very, very technical, there are resources out there, either online or, you know, a local attorney in Albany would be able to assist you. I know Albany well. I'm a SUNY Albany graduate, and I'm sure there's certainly attorneys there, your local bar association, or I guess a Google search these days would be able to do that. It's not a terribly expensive proposition. It's filling out an application and submitting that. Do you need it? Well, you know, generally if you have a name that is gaining any traction, whether it's online commerce or something like that, it probably makes sense to try to trademark it. You don't have to, but then you really have nothing to say if somebody takes that name and copies it and runs with it and tries to steal the goodwill, for lack of a better term, you know, to capitalize on the good name that you've built up when you've been doing business.
Okay.
So, go ahead. Sorry.
No. You're fine. Please, if you got more information or questions to assist me, I am all ears. So please continue.
Well,
yeah, I'm
listening, ahead,
Andrew. If you think that's the best way to go is to look online to trademark, or if you think because sometimes having a personal attorney, like, you know that you can trust that person, you're alive, you're whatever, you know, everything's covered, or is it really a cut and dry process where it just, you know, it's something you can do?
No, I mean, my real opinion is, and I hesitate to even say the word, but all right, LegalZoom, right? We've all heard of that. Draft a will,
right.
LegalZoom, they can do a trademark LegalZoom, but LegalZoom is not going to answer your question. They don't know what questions to ask you about your business, and they're not a person who can counsel you and take steps along the way. So,
right,
you know, any kind of business, if you're, you know, if you're running a business and the business is viable, it really makes sense to form a relationship with trusted advisors, right? You need your financial advisor, whether that's your accountant or CPA or what have you, but a good general counsel attorney who could answer your questions and work with you. You know, that's much better, a better situation than sort of going the LegalZoom route, if I have to say. So, for example, I used to have clients who would get in litigation all the time. And I make a lot more money in litigating a case than I would if I would have drafted the agreement, made sure it was correct, and didn't have a problem, so it wouldn't blow up down the road.
Right.
And that kind of continuing counsel to pick up a phone and say, hey, this is what's happening now. Should I do A or B? And they can guide you to the correct path. You know, you could avoid worse outcomes down the road. So, you know, if it's at all affordable, I would definitely recommend finding a local attorney who could help you with a trademark application. Again, it's not a big cost. Although, you know, people don't love paying attorneys. But when you're making money doing business, it's good to have somebody who you can rely on. You can pick up the phone. They'll answer your questions. They'll return your calls. So,
right. Exactly.
That's
all
right.
Yeah.
That's
what
probably the route that I
like
want to go.
Trademark
wait, sorry. Go ahead, Joanne. What were you going to ask?
No, I like the recommendation of a personal attorney, especially, you know, somebody to return my calls and, you know, help the process along, because the name that I have for my product is starting to pick up traction just a little bit. Like, people are using it to order. You know, can I have this item name, please? Can you custom make this item name, please? So I need to protect that.
And the best way to find somebody is really through a referral. If there's somebody who in your business community who you feel is a mentor or a colleague that you respect and trust, ask them who they use, who are they happy with them, who could they recommend, and that's it's going to be much a much quicker and easier and dependable way to find somebody that's knowledgeable and experienced than, you know, finding an attorney on Yelp or Googling or something like that. So if you have somebody, a business group that you associate with, or a mentor or a colleague that that you work with, ask, who do you use? Do you like them? Do you like her? Is she responsive? Is she too expensive? Is she reasonable? Does she return calls? And then you get to build a relationship like that.
I'm going to add one more thing, and it's only from personal experience, but definitely make sure that they do litigation and that they're good at the litigation too, because there are attorneys who don't do litigation even though they do business law, and you always want someone, you know, just in case you ever, and God forbid you ever, have that issue, you want someone who's going to go to bat for you.
Right.
Well, larger firms will have both. Smaller firms may, sole practitioners, it's rare. I came to it from the opposite end. I started litigating and then I went into transactions. So I know what the hot spots are, and now I do kind of both, which is kind of unusual. But you know, if you have, somebody who actually has a lot of experience, they can guide you down that road. And if they have experience in litigation, great. If not, you'll have to hope that they've taken care of you. And if you have to go, if you need somebody to go to bat, if they can't do it, they should be able to refer you to somebody who can. When you deal again with larger firms, they'll have that in-house, but they tend to be more expensive.
Okay, I understand. All right, that was definitely helpful. I felt like that was something that I needed to do, but hearing it from a professional telling me that's something I need to do, then, yeah, I'll start making some phone calls.
Very good.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, good
luck,
and thank you for calling in.
Hey, Andrew, just one second, Joanne, Andrew, just if you want to contact Andrew, what can you give your contact information, Andrew, the name of your firm, and how anyone can get a hold of you and your website?
Sure. My name is Andrew Crabtree. My law firm is the Law Offices of Andrew Crabtree in Melville, New York. You can reach me at andrew@crabtreeesq.com, three E's in a row. I'm happy to chat with anybody virtually or by phone. My website, which is a terrible, terrible website. This is what I don't do marketing, I don't do schmoozing and networking. neglected my website forever, but it's www.crabtree, andrew@esq.com. So either through the website or you can email me directly. Again, andrew@crabtreeesq.com.
Great.
Got it. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for calling in, Joanne.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
So we have about 5 minutes left. Any advice, any word, you know what, I want to ask you words of wisdom from the legal counsel seat in a COVID environment. So whether it's dealing with transactions, selling airplanes, so if we have any listeners selling their jet, or I'm asking for your words of wisdom, Andrew, in this kind of environment, whether it's, you know, you talking as an entrepreneur or dealing with any other kind of legalities in this environment that are probably not run-of-the-mill. You know, this is sort of the black swan we're in. So your last words of wisdom.
Well, I'd say the first thing is that don't lose hope. You know, we don't know when this is going to end, but it's going to end. And there will be attempts will be made to ease the pain of individuals and companies. So just be aware and follow the news on that. It may be, you know, debt forgiveness, it may be rent forgiveness. If you're an entrepreneur, stay in touch with your customers, stay in touch with your referral sources, people who send you business, add value to them or for them. Whatever your expertise is. As a lawyer, I add value by sending out alerts on government programs, giving virtual webinars or presentations or, you know, guidelines for working remotely. But whatever your business is, there's a way to reach out to customers and say, okay, you know, interior design in the COVID world. Okay, can we do that virtually? Yes, we can. And so you can add value like that. And when you reopen, LoriGirl.com is also a great interior decorator. But also take it slowly.
Thank you, Andrew.
You want to communicate. You want to keep the lines of communication open with your customers, with your creditors, your debtors, and really take a hard look at your cash flow. A lot of companies had to lay off employees and cut expenses because the business operations were slow. It's a great opportunity to look at what you need and don't need. All businesses bloat and accumulate expenses that they otherwise don't need, just because over time that's just the nature of how businesses work. Be willing to take a hard look, cut your expenses, look at your cash flow, and take profit first. I need to make 10% profit, 15% profit, and if I'm not making that, you either have to cut expenses or increase the business. So that this is an opportunity to look back and see what's the DNA, what's the core of my business, you know, a business expense is a great opportunity right now to get rid of that and negotiate everything. You can negotiate with your rent, loan payments, vendors, salaries. Everybody right now is willing to negotiate. Everybody wants to keep things going rather than force a crisis or an eviction or a bankruptcy or something like that. But it's an opportunity to recast your situation.
Are there people out there renegotiating with their vendors, like suppliers, people who are always supplying something? Are people renegotiating prices now?
Every day, you know, with your copier company, you know, if you maybe more difficult because they've sold that lease, but if you know your coffee vendor, I want to keep on making. You're getting the coffee delivery, whatever you have, you want to keep this relationship going, but times are tough, and I can't do it like I was doing it before. What are you willing to do? Are you willing to work with me? Can you still provide the same service and products at a lower cost? Yeah. And so that's a negotiation. You might have to take a hard look. Do I need this, that, and the other thing? Can I cut back?
Right.
But it's very, very rare And often people are uncomfortable with negotiating. I think they're being cheap or chintzy, but you know, a lot of people do it. And now is a great excuse. Now's a great time to use that as an excuse to negotiate. Everything is negotiable.
Okay, good, perfect. That's a perfect place. That's what everyone wants to hear an attorney say. Everything's negotiable. No, negotiable.
Right.
So
that's
Andrew,
right.
Like you've been really great. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
and
you
supplying
so much,
great
Andrew.
Words of wisdom. Yep. Thank you. And thank you for everyone who listened to the show and the callers. This is a great show. And good luck to everyone out there. And we look forward to speaking to you next week.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Thank you, Andrew, again. Take care, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you to the Sports Store for our sponsorship.